brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free book of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hello, everyone. I'm Jen, and I'm joined tonight by Karen and Mikhail. Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hello.
How have you ladies been?
Good.
Good.
Good, good, good.
Apparently, we're just talking together now.
Yeah, we're all talking in sync tonight. It's a little weird. When we ask a question, we answer together. I don't know if that bodes well for the quality of this podcast. We'll have to see.
Well, Karen and I need to get back together after last week.
Oh, were you guys off last week? It didn't work out so well.
Well, we had a little disagreement.
Did you have an argument?
Karen, oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So
Karen, I'm so proud of you.
Well, it wasn't an argument, but Mikhail really, really liked Half Bad, and I really, really didn't. And it
Which
was like
to me, I'm sorry, is just all kinds of backwards.
What? Thank you.
Really, Karen, you usually like those kinds of things, and that's not a bad. Oh, she's dropping stuff.
Oh, that wasn't me.
That was totally not planned. but it is a blade, so sorry.
Oh boy.
I mean, it's nail clippers, but technically.
Sharp objects down, please. Please, I beg of you. But it's true. Usually you like the books we read. For the most part, you've liked them. Even the Sherlock Holmes one you liked. So it's a little surprising that you don't like this one. But anyway, continue. Were you going to tell me anything else? Sorry.
Not really. Just that we disagreed. So now we have to agree again, because then everything will be right in the universe.
The balance will have returned. Where did Marima fall on that? Did she like it or didn't like it?
She was actually in the middle. Like, she was really neutral.
She didn't like it, though. She was not neutral. I edited that episode. She was like, yeah, all you who liked the book were just wrong, so.
She was neutral-ish.
For Marima, she was neutral?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, neutral tomorrow on my hands.
That's good distinction.
All right. Well, I actually liked it for the most part. Like, I thought it was pretty cool. It was like, I liked the writing of it. It felt very sparse, especially in the beginning. It wasn't like overly descriptive or anything, but you really got into the character's head, which I thought was kind of cool. So for the most part, I liked it. And I really liked that the nice British man read it to me on Audible, so that worked for me. See, maybe that's what you need, Karen. Maybe you need the Audible version.
Maybe.
So you can have the nice British man read to you.
Yeah.
Make all the difference in the world. Anyway, what have you all been reading since we last spoke? Because I was not here last week. I sadly had a very, very bad migraine. The spring is not treating me very nicely.
I'm reading a book called Dangerous by Shannon Hale, which I believe is her first YA. And it's interesting. If you don't know Shannon Hale, she's the author of The Goose Girl and the other books of Bayern and The Princess Academy and a whole bunch of books. And she wrote Austenland. So I'm liking it. It's the kind of book that sort of changes the scenario very quickly. So, like, the scenario of the first, 40 pages is vastly different from the scenario of the next 40, and then things just keep on changing. It's also a little bit uneven in terms of, like, her, like, the YA elements of it. So, like, the character doesn't swear, and she, like, won't write swear words, so she just has, like, when people swear, she says bleepity bleep. But then at the same time, like, she kind of, like, gets into a relationship with this guy and, like talks about how she's feeling about that and if she wants to have sex with him and, like, all this stuff. And I was like, okay, it's not like, bad or anything. It was just a little, like, uneven for me to, like, pin
so the,
down
the balance character. Feels a little bit off within the character.
Yeah. But it's very interesting. It has accolades from, like, basically every important YA author out there. And it's cool sci-fi with a one-armed half-Paraguayan female protagonist. So if you've never read a book like that before, check this one out.
More diverse books.
Exactly. I like it. Oh, yes. Oh, should we talk about that campaign that's going on?
Okay, yeah, we'll get to that. We'll add that in. All right, so Karen, what have you been reading?
I've been slacking a little bit. I am ramping up to read a bunch of books, so hopefully next time I will have a lot more done. But this week I've only read one. I finished Graduation Day by Joelle Charbonneau, and that's the final book in the Testing series. And I've talked about those books before, but this book was really, really good. And I mean, the first book's a little bit rough, and it's very much The Hunger Games meets Divergent. And I think it's obvious that she's pulling from those like big dystopian type novels. But as the series progresses, it gets so much better and it really becomes its unique thing. And the second book was really good, but the third book was just really excellent. And I really enjoyed the twists that happened. And it's cool because a lot of the characters in the book, you never quite know which side they're on until pretty much the very end of the book. And I think that as somebody who does read a lot, it's hard to sort of keep those secrets from me because, you know, you tend to realize who's going to be the bad guy, who's going to be the good guy, how things are going to turn out. But this one was really actually pretty surprising. And I really enjoyed it. So I think if you've tried the first book, weren't totally on board with it, read the second book. And if you like that one, definitely read the third one because it gets so much better.
All right. Sounds good. I've read a couple different things since I last spoke with you all. I read The Deep Blue by Jennifer Donnelly. And for those of you who don't know, Jennifer Donnelly is a critically acclaimed young adult author. She typically writes more realistic fiction. It's not really, which is, you know, I know that's a contradiction, but work with me. There's not a lot of fantasy elements to any of her writing. She's won tons of book awards and her writing is very beautiful. So she has a new project and it's with Disney Hyperion and it's called The Deep Blue. And they kind of went to her with this project and said, what do you think about writing about mermaids? And so she did it. And the book is really, really cool. It is technically a YA novel, but it reads a little bit younger in the first novel. But it's still really cool. She's built this world, of course, in the ocean, of all of these different realms. So if you think of like Once Upon a Time, where it has all these different realms within like the Enchanted Forest world, it's kind of like that, but in the ocean. And so all of these mermaids have to come together to try to protect their world against this uprising evil of witches. So kind of like an Ursula character, if you will. And the mermaids are these really, really cool, diverse kind of creatures that come from different parts of the ocean. So they look and feel different, like if you came from different parts of the world. So it's this beautifully kind of crafted story with this really gorgeous background and setting and these really cool, diverse mermaids that kind of have to come together and kind of fight off these witches. So I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was cool. And it's really, like, when you read it, you can picture what the mermaids look like. And if you Google, there are images available to look and see what these mermaids are crafted and how they look. And they're absolutely stunning. Like, it's a very, like, you can feel, like, you really can envision what you're reading as you're reading it. So I really enjoyed it. That one was a lot of fun to read. I also finished Don't Look Back by Jennifer Armentrout. And I was kind of on a kick because I read two of her books recently. And
what did you think about that? I don't look back.
I really liked it. It was super cool. Primarily because it opens with this girl who doesn't know who she is. She doesn't remember. She just knows that something happened. So she's found by the police walking down this really lonely, deserted road, and she has no memory of who she is, of what happened, and what's going on. And while she's in the hospital, she finds out that she wasn't the only girl missing. Her best friend was also missing. And she has absolutely no memory of who this girl even was, of who she was, or anything like it. So she basically has to kind of fight to figure out who she is and what happened to her and her friend, because everyone's assuming that they were together. So it's kind of a really cool story because the girl doesn't remember who she is and she wasn't a very nice person. So now she's all kinds of like, well, I don't understand why you're while you expect him to be this, but that's not who she is at the moment because she's kind of brand new in a sense. So it's a really cool kind of combination of mystery and finding yourself and figuring out what's happened. And there's some really cool suspenseful things going on in the book. It was really well written. And you don't really know who it was and what happened until the very end when they tell you. Like, it's really suspicious. And it's super cool. And it kind of keeps you on the edge of your seat. So I really enjoyed it. It was well done. The other Jennifer L. Armentrout book I wrote, the other book I read by her was called White Hot Kiss. And, like, the title is kind of odd. I'll give you that. Like, it makes it sound like it's this big epic romance book. It's not really. I mean, there's romantic elements to it. But it's this really cool mythology about gargoyles. And gargoyles being kind of like this form of angel. And so they're humans that can change back and forth to gargoyles. And humans know that these gargoyles exist. What they don't realize is that the reason the gargoyles exist and are around is to protect them from the actual demons. Because there has to be a balance. There has to be this idea of free will. And they felt if humans knew about demons, it would be too much. So basically, they're kind of on this mission to protect the humans from the demons that are coming up from hell. Now, there's the main character is Layla, and she is a half demon, half gargoyle. And she's working with the gargoyles against the demons in a way until she meets this demon boy who's trying to help her and tell her who she really is, because no one's actually told her who her mother was. And her mother was a demon. She was kind of a badass demon. So it's a really cool story. I enjoyed it. I really like Jennifer Armentrout and the way she writes. Don't Look Back is obviously a contemporary thriller novel, which is very different from everything else she's written. She's mainly written kind of paranormal romances, in a sense, like her Origin series and all of that. Or her Lux series, excuse me, is that as well, as well as this new series, the White Hot Kiss series. So I like those, but I really, really did I like her contemporary fiction a lot. So that's what I've been up to in the reading world. And I have a bunch of new stuff that I kind of need to get through. It's piling up on me. I've been
me too. I actually just reorganized my entire bookshelf, and I pulled off all of the books that I've read and put them on like a mini bookshelf, and then put all of the books that I haven't read yet on one bookshelf, and it's almost full. It's so bad.
Yeah, no, I have piles. Like, I have a stairwell that leads downstairs to, like, the playroom area and stuff, like, where I keep all my books. And the stairwell, where there's a ledge, and it's, like, filled with books. I'm like, oh my god, I must start reading. So there's a lot to read coming up. And there's so many good things that I want to read. So I think tomorrow is just going to be, like, a reading day. I'm just going to sit down and read the whole day.
That sounds amazing.
That's the plan. I know, it's an exciting plan. I'm kind of happy about it. As you guys know, we here at BookHype really love Audible as a service. I think we've all used it and we've all talked about it a ton. It is really fantastic. All of us use it in different ways. I know I use it a lot when I travel or when I'm at the gym because it's an easy way to squeeze in some extra reading that I need to get done and still do something else and be really functional. So one of the books we're going to suggest for you guys is The Daughter of Smoke and Bone series. Actually, there's three different books. It has an amazing reader. She's really easy to listen to, and she really embodies Karou. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful series. And the last book in the series, The Dreams of Gods and Monsters, just released a couple weeks ago, and Mikhail and I went to actually the book event with Lainey Taylor. It was awesome. So we are highly suggesting you guys check out Audible and get a free book. So for a free book of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. It's a really great service, and we hope you guys enjoy it. All right, so let's talk about, this was a listener question or comment that was brought to us, and they want to know what our three favorite series and our three favorite books are. Now, I have to say that this is probably one of the hardest things for us to do,
I'm not a fan of you, listener.
We do love you,
Why listener. Do you do this to me?
We love you, but it's really, really hard. Just choosing three is, like, it's challenging because there are a lot of different factors. I know for me, there are a lot of different factors that play into what my favorites are at the time. It could be something I've just read. It could be something that I love and I've read over and over again. It could be the mood that I'm in. Like, it really, it's hard to say, and there's so many. So I did my best to choose some things. I know Karen switched hers up a little bit. Karen, why don't you go ahead and tell us about yours? Because you're like, I always say what my three favorites are. Everyone's going to know.
Yeah. So I mean, pretty much everyone knows that I love Harry Potter, Percy Jackson, and the Lost Years of Merlin series. And those probably are my top three. But I think, like you were saying, it sort of depends on the time as well, because I have those all-time favorite books, but then these other ones will crop up sporadically, and I'll be like, oh, I really love this one right now, and then they'll kind of, like, go away, and it's really hard to pin it down. But three other series that I really, really love that I wanted to mention, that I'm sure I've mentioned before, the first one is Everworld, and that one is one of the first books that really stuck in my mind. It was a very difficult read for me when I was younger, like in middle school, and it's all about mythology, and it has like Loki in it, and you know, all these other sort of Norse myths, and it's really creepy but also just really, really cool. And I really want to reread it because I haven't done that in a long time, and I think I would understand it a lot better now that I'm way more grown up and I know a lot more about mythology. But that one has always really stuck out in my mind. Another one is the Robert Langdon series by Dan Brown, which is like Angels and Demons and the Da Vinci Code. I really like those first two. The third one, not quite as much, but it had some really good elements to it, and I haven't read the fourth one yet, but as an art history major, those books just really sort of speak to me. And even though, like, it's all made up, guys, I don't know if you realize that yet, it really is, but it's a really cool idea to see, you know, art history at the forefront of such a really big novel. I mean, it's a very popular series, so I always like seeing that. And then the third series is the Avalon series by T.A. Barron, and this is sort of like a spin-off series to The Lost Years of Merlin, so hope you guys didn't think I wasn't going to mention him again. It's a three-book series, and it's really quite different than the Merlin series, but it is related, and I just really like how he calls back to the original series, but also sets up this completely new world with completely new characters that are just as memorable as the ones in the Merlin series.
Awesome. Michal, did you come up with anything, or are you, like, still being angsty about all this?
No, I'm still being angsty about it, but I have some suggestions to myself. I have to do A Song of Ice and Fire by George R. R. Martin, because that series has basically become my life. And sadly, I'm not exaggerating about that. You know, you guys know what that is. That's Game of Thrones. It's, you know. I also really love the Monstromologist series by Rick Yancey, even though I haven't read the final book because I knew it was going to depress me and make me sad. And I was like, when it came out, I was like, I can't deal with this right now. And that was like last year. But my brother read it and he really liked it. So, I will get to that at some point. Another series that I have a lot of fondness for is Gentleman Bastard Sequence by Scott Lynch, which is also high fantasy. And yeah, they're really fun books to read, really entertaining, and they thoughtful and well written, hilariously written at points. And yeah, I'm a big fan. And the reason I didn't say Megan Whalen Turner is because I'm saving her for later. Also Harry Potter. So that's five, okay.
Oh boy. Okay, for me, I think The Demon's Lexicon by Sarah Rhys Brennan, that series is something I've loved and I've loved for a really long time. When I read the first book, you get to the end and you're just like, what just happened? Because there's this really great reveal, and I think that always stuck with me because it's not something you see coming, and oftentimes because as readers, if we read a lot of this, of similar things, you can kind of guess what's going to happen. So if a book can come up and surprise you the way this one did, I thought it was really quality and really well done. And I just like the way she writes. She has these really fantastic, she has a lot of diverse characters. She has a lot of sarcastic characters and a lot of female characters that are strong, and yet they still have their flaws and they're still finding themselves. So there's this really great balance in her books that's kind of encompasses a lot of different things that not all books have. So I really liked that about this series. Every book is told by a different narrator, which is interesting. I wasn't the fondest of who the last narrator is because it kind of throws things off a little bit. But I still love the series, and I love what it does and how it handles things. It's really unique and fun, so I highly suggest people read that one. And I think I've talked about that probably numerous times. But the other series that I love, and this is another series, and it's historical fiction, and it's by Deanna Raeburn, and it's the Lady Julia Grey series. And I am in love with the series. It is so brilliant. And every time I talk to people, I try to like give it to them. I think I've gotten like Laura and like tons of other people reading it because I'm like, no, you have to read this. No, you have to read this. And it's this really fantastic murder mystery series. And it's so well done. It's about Lady Julia Grey, who in the very first scene of the novel is standing over her dying husband's body. And, like, the first line of the first novel is, the first time I ever met Mr. Brisbane was over my husband's dead body. She's like, oh, no, wait, that's wrong. He was still gasping for air. He wasn't dead yet. And so just that kind of introduction to the world is so fantastic. And what I love most about this series is you have Julia Grey, who starts off as a lady. Her father is an earl. And she's led this very protected, sheltered life. She has a huge family. Her brothers and sisters are all very quirky characters. So for me, this is a very character-driven book. And the mysteries are really, really well done. It's really hard to predict who actually did it and their reasonings for it because they're just so well-crafted. And Lady Julia Grey, over the series of books, there's six right now, or a couple novellas in there, changes and becomes who she really is meant to be over these novels. She changes from kind of this very meek lady into, you know, Julia Grey wannabe detective kind of thing. And it's fantastic. And I just love that series to death. I can't recommend it enough. And then the last one I thought of is The Raven Cycle, which is Maggie Siebauer's latest set of novels. And I like this one because it's different. I like it because you look at this, you have these really cool sets of characters. You have the idea behind it is that they're looking for ley lines, which are energy lines, and they're looking for the King of Glendower, which is a Scottish king. And so it has these really cool mythical elements in it that you're not really used to seeing in novels. Like, it's not something you see a lot in YA. So it's very different and unique, and I love that about this story. And I like the way she tells it. It's very different from her other series. And I just really enjoy the characters. I guess for me, what I realized when I was creating these lists was that it really needs to be about characters. And the better the characters are, the more interesting, the more fun, the more entertaining, the more I'm likely to like the book. I don't know. I have a thing for really cool, quirky characters, I guess. But I really like The Raven Cycle. And it's only the first two books are out. I'm desperately waiting for the third book, which hopefully comes out, I think, this fall. So those are my three series that I really, really like and enjoy reading and would, you know, suggest to everyone to give them a try. Let's move on to favorite books. I know. I'm going to make you go first, Michal. Go ahead.
Oh, God. Okay, The Queen of Atolia by Megan Whalen-Turner is one of my favorite books. It is, the main character has something hugely traumatic happen to him in, like, the third chapter, and it, like, you know that feeling you get when your feels are, like, ripped out of your body and, like, spun around you and they tie you into knots and you can literally do nothing but sit there and shake and go, my feels. Yeah, that did that to me. Beautifully written. I love those books. I've talked about them forever. I'm just gonna do not, okay, I'm going to change this. Not favorite books, but books that were so good that they made me despair of being a writer. One of which is Quintana of Charon, which I think I spoke about last week or the week before. Second book in Melina Marchetta's series, gorgeous, stunning, amazing, wonderful, beautiful book. And also Days of Blood and Starlight by Lainey Taylor. Because, yeah, fantastically gorgeous book. Really, really well done. Like one of those that just like closes together at the end in such a beautiful and like formative way. And I have other books on the list, but I don't really remember exactly what they are right now. So, yeah.
Karen, why don't you go ahead?
Okay. What I decided to do for these three favorite books was standalones that just really stuck with me. And I wouldn't really call them my favorite books ever because a lot of my favorite books ever go up to, like, they line up with my favorite series. So you won't, like, Goblet of Fire from Harry Potter and House of Hades from Percy Jackson. So those kind of things. So I kind of decided
Goblet of Fire is your favorite?
Yes.
Whoa.
Is that bad?
Don't be judging me, pal.
No, I just haven't heard that one as the favorite. For
really? Oh, well. Yeah. Okay. so I decided to go with standalones. And I mean, the first one is Fangirl because it was so good and it spoke to me so much. I mean, we had an entire discussion about this, so I won't go on and on about it, but it's really fantastic. The second one was The Beginning of Everything by Robin Schneider, which I've also talked about before and will probably keep talking about because it's just, it was really different for me. I don't read a lot of contemporary novels, but this one really, really stuck out to me and was actually one of the books that got me into reading contemporary novels more often. And I'm really sort of leaning towards them, not more than my fantasy books, my usual go-to books, but it's something that I definitely will consider picking up now, partly because of this book. And then the third one is Frankenstein, because that was the first classic book that I actually enjoyed reading. Not that I just liked it or I thought it was good, but I actually enjoyed reading it. I just thought that it was really well written. It wasn't boring or too dense like a lot of classics are. And I would probably read it again, which I don't think I've ever said about a classic book before. So it was that good, to me at least.
That's pretty impressive, Karen, that you like Frankenstein that much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm not in love with Frankenstein, but man, you have a lot of feels about Frankenstein.
I do. Oh my God. It was really, really bad when I was reading it because I was getting like super into it. And especially like Frankenstein's monster, like I had a lot of feelings about it. And I was like, where did this even come from?
True. Very true. Interesting. I like that. Very cool. All right. For me, these were hard to pick. I stared a lot at my bookshelf for a long time trying to figure out which one was like my favorite. And I don't know if I really actually have a solid favorite, but this one book, April and Oliver, it's by Tess Callahan and it came out ages ago. It's an adult novel. Again, this is what kind of made me think about it. It's super, super character driven. It's about these two people who grew up as friends and they're in their mid-20s. And April is a disaster. She's just lost her brother, which is kind of the last shred of sanity she has in the world. And she's rock bottom. You can't get much lower than April is. And she has a crappy job and she has no ambition. She has a horrible boyfriend. Everything in April's world is broken. And then you have her friend Oliver who returns for her brother's funeral. And Oliver is very different. Oliver is set to be engaged. He's a lawyer. Which is what his mother wanted him to be before she passed away. So he's done everything he should do. But there's still part of Oliver that's not right either. And so it's kind of about these two people and how they figure out how to fix themselves. Because I think the best way to describe Oliver is that he's broken in so many ways, but the pieces haven't fully, like the cracks haven't fully connected for him yet. So even though he looks like he's leading this fantastic life, everything about him is cracked. And basically he needs to break before he can really figure out who he's going to be. Whereas April's already shattered into a million pieces. Somebody just needs to glue her back together. Or she needs to glue herself back together. And so it's this really interesting story about these two people and how they figure out who they're going to be and how they're going to overcome many of the things that have happened in their past. Because they've both had kind of difficult pasts, especially April. So it's a matter of figuring out how they fix themselves. And it's not necessarily a romance in any way. It's really about people and kind of adversity and how they figure themselves out. The next book that I really, really love is We Were Liars by E. Lockhart. And I know we've talked about this. Maram and I have like talked about this endlessly. And I know we bring it up all the time. But this book is so fantastic. Like, I can't wait for you guys to read it. It is just so good. I love the way it's crafted. I love the way it's written. There's so many things about it that are just spectacular. So it's kind of made its way up on my list as something that I think lots of people should read because it's really, really good. And the last one I picked is called Past Perfect, and it's a contemporary YA by Layla Sales. And I loved it for its humor and its kind of simplicity. It's a really fun, quirky story about this girl who works at a reenactment camp. Like, have you guys ever been to, like, a reenactment village in, like, Williamsburg? Or, like, I know up in Massachusetts there's Old Sturbridge Village, like, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, she, if I let myself go to those too much, I would, like, make it my life, so I can't
yeah,
do
okay,
that.
Well, it's her life because her parents have always worked there. So she's always been brought in to work over the summers as her summer job. And so she, like, insists that she's going to get out of it this year, and then she can't, and she gets stuck going. And then there's, like, there's a Civil War one that's set up across the street. So they have like these summer camp wars between the Civil War camp and the colonial camp. I know that sounds really dorky, but I love this book. And so it's just this really fun story about summer and maybe finding a boy that you like, but what happens if he works at the Civil War camp and you work at the colonial camp kind of thing. Like, it's just super fun and it's really witty and just, it's enjoyable. Layla Sales like used to do like stand-up comedy and stuff, and she works in the publishing industry, and she's super, super funny. I love what she writes. It always has this really great wit to it. So I highly suggest Past Perfect. It's so fun. So those are my three favorite books as of like now. Ask me again in like a month and it could change.
Yeah. But
that's where I'm at right now. All right. So let's get into some conversation about some new things that have been coming up more recently. There was an article that I wrote on Hypeable this week about contemporary novels being made into films. It seems like they're on the rise. Like, now is the time of the contemporary novel to be adapted. Whereas in the past, it's always been the fantasy novel or the dystopian novel, because those are the novels that tend to hit really, really big on the New York Times bestselling list. They tend to sell a lot of things. Are a lot of books, and so they're the most prominent and visible in a lot of ways. Would you guys agree with that, or how do you guys feel about that?
Well, it's interesting for me because I'm just not really into that genre anyway, so it's always been sort of the stuff that I assumed I should read and don't. So to see it kind of come to prominence is interesting because I'm sort of like, oh, I guess those books weren't as popular as I thought they were, but now they are. So I'm sort of in that place, but it's cool. I mean, like, I hope anything that can kind of, I don't know, make people a little bit less disdainful of like YA film adaptation, I think is going to be a good thing. So, I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. Karen, I would say pretty much the same. Like I said before, contemporary novels aren't necessarily my thing, although I'm getting into them more often. And I think I've said this before on past episodes that I really don't mind if contemporary novels start getting adapted more. I think that's great. I think that's great for the authors and for the people who really already love those books. Maybe people who haven't found them yet but will through the movies, as long as it doesn't take away from, you know, those big fantasy movies that we all like. And I don't think it will. I think that there's space enough for them to kind of like share the limelight. But, you know, anything that will get people to read more, even if it's because the movie's coming out, is fine by me.
Okay. See, I think it's really interesting because I think that there has been this kind of movement towards the contemporary novel for a couple different reasons. A, the budget on a contemporary adaptation is significantly less than the budget on a dystopian or a fantasy novel.
Mm-hmm. Flat out. CGI.
There's nowhere around it. It's just less. Because the requirements are less. And then you have things like, you know, The Fault in Our Stars was a major book. It did really, really well. And other contemporary novels like Fangirl and Eleanor and Park, and, you know, they've done really, really well. So I think that they're acknowledging the fact that there are other things out there besides the, you know, those big fantasy dystopian novels or paranormal, you know, vampire novels that could see success and that have a lot to offer. So I'm really glad that things are opening up in the world of adaptation, that it's not just a big blockbuster, you know, let's get all that CGI and make it a big deal, that there's something else to offer. So I'll be curious to see what else they start to choose from. And, you know, I think The Fault in Our Stars is going to be ridiculous. Like, it's going to make a lot of money. I really, really think that it's going to be super successful, which will open up the doors for other contemporary novels to be adapted. You know, and If I Stay has already been made and it comes out in August. So, and I saw the trailer and it looks really cool. It looks like it was well done. So I think between those two, that's going to kind of usher in this new idea behind what should be adapted moving forward and what gets chosen to be adapted. And we all know that Eleanor Park has been, you know, optioned, and that Rainbow Rowell is going to write the screenplay for it, which I'm so excited about. So I think that
me
over
too.
Time, I know.
Sorry, I'm like it's halfway okay. through the book right now, and it, like, I was telling Marima, like, it's so good it makes my chest hurt, and
yeah.
I don't even know how I'm gonna be able to watch the movie, but I don't care because I'm just so excited about it.
Yeah. So I think that as they move forward into this endeavor, you know, of adapting books, because that seems to be something that's not gonna go away. Like, that's gonna be kind of a standard, I think, for a while. As long as they're done well, then, you know, that's great. And I know there were some comments on the article that people don't want to see, you know, they want them to leave the books alone. And I get that too, because if you love this book and it gets made and it's terrible, then it's painful. And we've definitely all been there with something that we loved as a book, and when it came out as a movie, we're like, what? That's not, I don't understand. So it'll be interesting to see how things progress. And I know that right now there is the first screening of The Fault in Our Stars, and the amount that Twitter has exploded from that, just the screening, leads me to believe that it's going to be mayhem come June. So it should be pretty interesting to see how that plays out. All right. So let's talk about another bit of news, which is the diversity campaign. Have you guys heard about this?
Yes. We need diverse books.
Yeah, I mean,
Twitter.
I think it's odd that it actually has to be a campaign and that it has to be like a thing. Like, I don't understand why books are so whitewashed. And what really bothers me is when there are diverse characters within a novel and the covers are whitewashed. Like, I don't get it. Then don't put a person on your cover if that's how you feel about it, but don't make them look like this, unlike the description in the book, and be like, I don't know. I that bothers me more than anything. Like, having people of color or something, you know, different in a book, and then, but having a white person on the cover is so disturbing on so many levels, and so just, I don't know. I can't find the right words for it. That's how much it agitates me. But so this particular campaign arose from BEA, the Book Expo America, which Mikhail and I will be attending in May, at the end of May. It's the largest book expo in the country. It's one of the biggest industry kind of conventions there is. And part of the problem is on Saturday is Book Con, which used to be like Power Readers Day, but they've set it up to make it this huge deal for readers to be able to come into the convention and have a day. So there's a huge, you know, announcement of all-star authors. So Jeff Kinney, James Patterson, Rick Riordan, Lemony Snicket.
Angry Cat. Grumpy Cat.
Grumpy Cat. Because, you know, cats are very important. And part of the problem was all 30 of the writers and the one cat that were invited are all white. Which, in today's day and age, seems drastically wrong to me. Like, I don't understand how all 30 writers they invited can be white. I know that there are diverse writers out there. I've read many of their books. So why weren't they invited? And that's kind of where it started. The one of Jeff O'Neill from he's the founder of the website Book Riot. His comment was, there are more cats than people of color scheduled, which is kind of disturbing when you think about it.
Wow.
Yeah. So the campaign is started by publishers and bloggers, and it's called We Need Diverse Books. The group's manifesto is, now is the time to raise our voices into a roar that can't be ignored. We need to spread the word far and wide so that organizers of BEA and every big conference and festival out there gets the message that diversity is important to everyone. You know, and again, it kind of baffles me that in today's day and age, it's so overlooked.
Yeah, and it feels like we're having this conversation over and over again. And by having, I mean, like, I observe people having the conversation. But it's, you know, you would think that, like, I mean, presumably there's no attempt to be like, oh no, we can only have white writers on this thing. You know, I highly doubt that that's going to happen. But there's just like this, I guess, assumption that the people that have valuable stuff to say fall into that category of being white and often male, you know, and I don't know. It's, you would think that, like, I mean, I think this is important because there have been, I think, a lot of, like, smaller things that have gone on, but, like, just having, like, a big, huge campaign like this, I think could be very helpful. I mean, I don't know if, like, publishers are going to start buying more diverse books or, you know, whatever. But I think that just raising awareness about it, period, you know, could even just, like, if, like, five people see, like, a book that is more diverse that they wouldn't normally have picked up in the bookstore and, like, think, oh, right, there was this campaign, maybe I'll pick it up. Like, then that's, like, successful, you know?
Yes, I agree. It's so hard because I don't know. Like, I guess maybe it's partly because I don't necessarily think about, oh, I'm picking up a book by a white author, or, you know what I mean? Or I'm picking a book with only white characters in it. Like, I don't think about that when I'm picking up a book or reading a book, but oftentimes I read books that have diverse characters in them. So maybe that's why I'm not thinking it. I don't know. It's really disturbing. And I think it also reflects, like, when we talk about, like, the New York Times bestselling list, it's the same kind of thing. Like, on the New York Times bestselling list right now, it's legitimately all males except for two. If I Stay, and that's probably because the trailer just came out for the movie, and Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. Those are the only two ladies on the list. Like, and other than that, it's John Green, The Book Thief by Marcus Duzak, and two for Ransom Riggs again. Like, I don't get it. I don't get how that works, and I don't get how those numbers are reflected. Again, how is Ransom Riggs back on the list with Miss Peregrine's? I'm confused. Yeah, I feel like he never leaves that list, ever.
You know, it's funny also because, like, thinking back on the books that I read in elementary school, like, for school, they were pretty diverse. I mean, like, I read, you know, like, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, and which is about post-slavery South. I read Year of the Born Jackie Robinson, which is about a Chinese girl who moves to America, and it's amazing, and you should read it. It's a short book. It'll take you 4 hours. It's amazing. You know, this just struck me, like, we didn't read a lot of spec fiction, obviously, you know, in school, but I don't know why maybe there's this, like, if it has more to do with YA and, like, this kind of generally packaged, like, protagonist form that we sort of have now, or, you know, I mean, there's, you know, there's a whole, like, discussion about, like, oh, is Katniss a character of color, and, you know, they made her not in the movies, whether or not she is in the books, and what does that mean, and all of these things are, you know, really interesting to think about, but it does kind of contrast with what I remember as a child, you know?
Yeah, well, and that you mentioned it, like, you're correct, we did read a lot of things that were more diverse, I think, in elementary school, middle school, and high school than that are available now. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is different, and I don't know why. Because they're definitely available. I guess they're just not put into kind of the forefront of what people read or what they're talking about all the time. Because what they're talking about typically comes from, like you said, a white male author. Never mind if the actual characters in the book are characters of diversity. So I don't know. It's just such a difficult topic because I know that there are books out there. I know that there are amazing books out there and amazing authors out there that are diverse. I just don't know why they're not getting the recognition that they deserve and why they're not invited to something like BookCon or BEA. That makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever.
I think one of the frustrating things for me with this BookCon thing is not necessarily that, like you said before, I don't think that these, you know, they were like, oh, we're not going to allow any people of color on, you know, in these panels and stuff. But I think just being like negligible of that fact is almost as bad, because why wouldn't you want people with other experiences in life to be able to come and talk to people where obviously a lot of people are going to be going to this BookCon. It's in New York City, which is a hugely diverse place. There's going to be a lot of people there who have very different life experiences and come from all over the place. Why wouldn't you want to have authors who can speak to those different kinds of people? And I think the fact that they didn't actively go out and try to do that is just as bad as if they were like, no, we don't want these other people here.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's not even the fact that they have these people coming that are coming. It's the fact that they didn't make any effort or they didn't even notice. I think that's what's worse, is that it's not like they did it purposefully necessarily, but it's the fact that they didn't even notice that it happened, kind of thing. And the whole thing is the BookCon day is the day that the public is allowed to like have a free reign at BEA. And it's they've crafted it this year to be this huge event. Read Pop is organizing all this really cool stuff, and none of it entails anyone with any diversity. So that's a little concerning that, you know, you're inviting the public in. This is a day for the public, and the only people you're considering are, you know, white. So I don't know. I don't know how they fix it now without it becoming this kind of like huge thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that something that I think everyone can take away from this is just the idea of noticing, you know, and like, because it's hard to notice, you know. I think we're not to get like too meta about this, but like to a certain extent we are trained by the things that we see and things that we read to think that like default people are kind of like white, you know, good looking, skinny, live in California, you know, whatever. I'm saying like more I guess your typical television person. And you know, that's just like even being aware that like these are kind of the people that tend to show up in your fiction, whatever that fiction is, I think is important, because you can't start like moving toward other kinds of characters without that cognizance, you know? And yeah, I mean, it's just important to think about and think about, you know, why that is. I mean, I know as like, as a writer, this has been like something that I've thought about a lot. Like, you know, if I want to include a character who like isn't like of my specific, you know, racial, gender, whatever makeup, it's hard. It's not easy, but at the same time, like it's so worth making the effort, you know. And we also need to celebrate like people who do make that effort, you know, which was why like BookCon would have been such a great, you know, venue for this. And honestly, like their whole like, I know the people at We Need Diverse Books were like very disappointed with their apology. I mean, I thought it was fine, but frankly, what they should have just said was like, we really messed up. You know, we say that diversity is important to us and we didn't follow through on that. And we apologize and we really need to make a better effort, you know, because it's that simple. You know, it's like, you're not horrible people, but you messed up on something that's important, you know.
Well, we'll see further down the line if that changes, if they end up inviting different authors. Because the whole thing is, the previous days at BEA, there are authors of diversity there. So why not just ask some of them to be a part of BookCon itself? Like, I don't get why they couldn't easily have made that transition. But I guess we'll see what happens as we get closer to the event. So some other news, we're going to switch gears now and talk about some new book deals. So some things to look forward to in the future, kind of like the 2015 future. But hey, you know, it's all good. Something to look forward to. So the first book that sounds kind of cool is it's by Carol Riggs. She's a debut YA author. And the book is called The Body Institute. And it follows a 17-year-old recruited by a weight loss company to train its clients by having her brainwaves downloaded into their bodies so she can exercise for them. So it explores the meaning of self in a brave new world. That sounds super creepy.
My jaw just dropped open. Like, that is not what I was expecting the book to be about.
Sounds really cool. I mean, like, as someone who hates exercise.
Mikhail's like, sign me up.
I know, it's horrible. But yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. And I think that it's, you know, yeah, sounds really cool. Into it.
Kind of creepy. I'm kind of interested to know. Another book is by Samantha Bee, and she was a Daily Show correspondent and a memoirist. So if you guys have ever watched, a memoirist, I should say. So it doesn't sound really weird. And she sold a middle grade novel, and it's about a 12-year-old named Peanut Beardsley, who is about to make a shocking discovery about her childhood. So it's set in New York City, and it's gritty and hilarious, and explores the friendship, family, and forgiveness. And that one's scheduled, actually, for the spring of 2016, which is way, way off. Another novel is by Sarah Fine, and it's called Marked. And it's the first installment of a paranormal adult romance series. And it's described as Grey's Anatomy meets Iona Andrews. I'm not really sure I understand the Iona Andrews reference. Do you guys?
No.
No. Is she a romance author?
I don't know. If there understands it, let us know.
Let's see. Ilona Andrews is
An urban fantasy novelist.
Oh. Okay, so Grey's Anatomy meets urban fantasy. Okay, let's work with that.
So there will be sex on lab tables and...
and zombies. No, I don't know.
With dragons!
Actually.
With dragons.
It says, the series follows a female paramedic who spends her night ferrying the dead to the underworld.
Ooh. So
that's where the urban fantasy stuff comes in. So, cool. And Marked is set actually for this year, 2014. So we shall see how that goes. And then in a rather large deal, in a six-figure deal, Gina Shulwater, who is a very established author, has sold a series to Harlequin Teen. And it's described as a dangerous rivalry for souls and star-crossed love is set in a world where real life begins after death. So that's kind of intriguing. I don't know about this real life begins after death thing. What do you guys think?
I don't...
Trying to figure out what that means.
Yeah, like, are they going to be, like, ghosts? Or, like, is this, like, some weird Matrix thing where they have to, like, go through something and, like, this is the real world?
I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Gina Shulwater writes a lot of kind of paranormal urban fantasy things. So I bet you it's got that vibe going for it. We'll have to see. But she usually writes some pretty cool things. Her take on stuff is very different. So I'll be curious to see what exactly that does entail. All right. And so there's another series. And this one is called Key to the Catalyst, and it's by Kent Davis, who is an actor, playwright, and game designer. This is his first fiction debut. He does have other tabletop gaming books. And the first in the series is called A Riddle in Ruby, and it's slated for 2015. And the series is set in an era called the Chemistral Age, where magically augmented alchemy and chemistry have been thrust an alternate version of the 1700s colonial America forward into industrialization. So it sounds like it might have a little bit of a steampunk vibe going on, which is very cool. And then the series heroine is a 13-year-old Aruba Ruby Teach, and she's a smuggler's daughter and a picklock prodigy, as every girl should be. And in book one, she and her servant Cram must navigate the world filled with kobolds, gear beasts, alchemical automatons, and devilish secret societies. I bet you that is going to be super cool. If he's a game designer, I'm
Yeah.
willing to bet,
It's
and
going
he's
to
a
be really
playwright,
visual.
yeah, that it's going to like leap off the page at you. I'm kind of curious about this in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of potential as far as I'm
Yeah.
concerned.
Well, that
Kobolds,
middle
gear
grade'll.
beasts
sounds amazing.
I know, right? Just the name of it. I'm like, ooh.
It
Anyway.
sounds very Riordan-esque, sort of, you know? Like I'm
It's.
thinking of the bulls in
Yeah. That's
yeah.
actually what I was thinking too.
So we'll see. That one sounds really cool. And then this one I wrote down because I think it sounds pretty cool. This one is from debut author Julie Weicker, I think is how you say her last name, Julia Weicker, and it's called Wonderblood. And it's told through the perspectives of three narrators, and the novel is set 500 years in the future in what was once the U.S. And here's the really interesting part. Weicker received her MFA at the Iowa Writers' Workshop in 2006. She won a Capote Fellowship and a Teaching Writing Fellowship. Now, this summer we have The Queen of the Tierling coming out, and she graduated from the Iowa Writers' Workshop as well, and I think it was a similar time frame. So, I think it's really cool that a lot of people are coming out of the Iowa Writers' Workshop and having their novels being picked up.
Yeah, for people
So.
who don't know or used to be like me and think that literally nobody wrote anything if they didn't live on the East Coast, the Iowa Writers' Workshop is literally the best writers' workshop in the US. So,
Yes.
yeah, there's actually a lot of good YA writers who come out of there. So.
Yeah, I just think it's really fascinating that within months of each other that these two have been kind of picked up.
Yeah, is this YA or is it?
It doesn't say. I don't think it is for some
Cool.
reason, but yeah, it sounded really cool. So yeah, so those are some of the new things coming out in the next couple of years, which is always super exciting. Something to really look forward to.
Soon we'll be talking about 2016 deals, yeah?
Well, there's a couple in here, yeah.
Oh. Oh, man.
I know, it's crazy. But like that was the thing. Like I always find it interesting to see what the publishing houses are picking up because it kind of leads to what's going to be coming our way in the future. So if they're concentrating on one kind of novel or one type of novel, it's always interesting to see what they're looking at, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's so funny because I mean I remember when I was working at the literary agency, like people would send books, and I mean you're supposed to do this, but you kind of say like queries would be like hopping on the latest trend of blah blah blah, and it's like yeah, but if you're querying now, your book is coming out in like 2 years if you're lucky,
You're
and this
behind on the
trend is going to
trend.
be way in the back. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, and again, I always find it so interesting to see what is being chosen by publishing houses and what's kind of going to be coming at us as readers. Because as readers, we're always looking for something new, something interesting, something different. So, I think it's cool to kind of look at that in advance and see what's coming our way. But that's just me, maybe. I don't know. All right, so do you guys have anything else for this episode?
Somebody did comment and sort us ish into they like assigned us godly parents.
Oh, yes!
Do it up.
All right, so this is from Lolita W, who commented on our last episode, and she said, "Don't get mad for sorting you into the wrong parent. I know a lot of people are quite protective on who their parent is. So Marima unfortunately wins because Marima is Hera or Athena, and Athena is the winner that we all want, obviously. You
Yeah,
have sass and you're not afraid.
who wants to be Hera's daughter? Come
Yeah,
on.
that's true. Also, obviously, technically, you can't be Hera's daughter, right? So, but whatever.
Yeah.
You're not afraid to insult someone. And Athena, you're just interested in learning, right? So, I guess aloof book hype would fit into Athena. Jen is Hera, holding the place together and keeping Larma in line.
Somebody has to do it.
Karen isn't dead yet. Okay.
What? What?
We do this on Skype. We don't do this in person, so. I think she's implying that Marama has the power to kill you, even though, like I said last episode, you can beat people up.
Yes.
Kyle is Hades, portrayed in Percy Jackson as death-obsessed. Doesn't give a damn, but willing to play fair. I think that's cool.
Although, it is, yeah.
I sort of see him as, what's his name? Hermes a little bit.
I was like, thinking friendly Hermes, too, when you said that, yeah.
Yeah. Karen is Aphrodite, a loving but ruthless person.
This is because I like Eminem, isn't it?
I questioned the ruthless statement, but okay.
I was not expecting Aphrodite's daughter. That's pretty cool. I'm quite happy with that, actually.
Yeah. And I am Artemis. There's a whole lot of determination coming through my headphones listening to Book Hype right now. So, yeah, I can do with Artemis. I mean,
that's actually really awesome and pretty accurate from what I know of you. I would definitely agree with that one.
I do kind of want a boyfriend, though. Yeah. Sorry, Artemis.
Sorry.
Although, oh no, actually, maybe from all of my rejection of romance, that actually fits pretty well.
Yeah, I was like, she who, like, denies anything romantic in any way, shape, or form, and, like, downs it every time it's brought up. So, yeah.
Okay, all right, Lolita, I appreciate your weird insight into my character.
Oh my goodness.
Guys, do you think we share too much about ourselves on Book Hype?
I don't know. They know you pretty well, that's for sure. Oh my goodness. Okay, so that wraps up this episode of Book Hype. Thank you for sorting us into our lovely Greek parents who, you know, who doesn't love something fun. So if you guys have anything else you can sort us into, have at it at this point. It's getting kind of entertaining, quite frankly.
I love it. I'm like, what do people think I'm like? You know, it's like having people write fan fiction about you, but like not creepy. Don't write fan fiction about us. Don't write fan
fiction about us.
Now I'm thinking Hunger Games AU book hype. Marma standing over all of our bodies.
Oh, I don't know about that, friends. Oh, boy.
I'll just curl up into a ball and hide.
Okay. Well, anyway, send us whatever else you think we fit into because it'll be entertaining for us. Okay, so we will talk to you guys again next week. If you have any ideas for topics or things you would like us to talk about, please make sure you leave comments on the post or you can tweet at us because we do check the Twitter. Until next time, guys, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
And I'm Michal.
Bye, guys.